this is on.
All right. I note that the time is 11:02, and we have a quorum. So we'll get started with the meeting. We'll start with a call to roll.
Sure. Stephen Bergeron.
Present.
Tony DiMaggio.
Present.
Heather Veneziano. Sorry.
Present.
Angela Gein.
Present.
Laverne Toombs. Robert Pearson. Gabriel Verdure.
Present.
Julio Guichard. We have five members constituting a quorum.
Thank you. Staff has asked that we defer the minutes to our next meeting. Do we have a motion to defer the minutes?
I'll move to defer the minutes.
Do we have a second for that?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
None opposed. The motion passes. I have no chairman's report prepared. I'm very excited to hear the director's report, so I'll turn it over to him.
Sure. The chair has asked me to draft the report based on the revisiting of short-term rentals in the French Quarter, which I have done, which will be my director's report today. City Planning Commission staff presented a report to City Council at Council's request for a text amendment to the CZO to modify the residential short-term rental regulations. At that time, no modifications to the current prohibitions or allowances currently extant within BCC or BCE zoning districts were recommended. On the report, I provided some tables that were from the CPC that will be in the record, just in case anybody's interested. BCC staff concurs with this directive retaining the current moratorium on STRs within the BCC mixed use, light commercial residential districts. Vicaray is and always has been a thriving community made up of residential, commercial, entertainment, and light industrial usage. Although the district is extremely attractive to tourism, and as such vital to the economic health of the city, it is absolutely not a tourist attraction, nor should it be one. The fact that it is a living, breathing neighborhood and community is critical to the unique character of this world-famous designated National Historic Landmark. The importance of the residential nature of the district cannot be overly expressed. Residents, not short-term renters, are critical to the day-to-day maintenance of the architecture, streetscape, and culture that tourists come to see and experience. Residents support local businesses such as corner groceries, hardware stores, florists, schools, etc., aspects of thriving neighborhoods to a greater degree than do tourists. Residents also contribute greatly to the local cultural expression that visitors from around the world come to experience. When residents are pushed out to make way for short-term rentals, all of this vitality is eliminated or greatly reduced. Short-term rentals also demonstrably drive up rental rates, exponentially driving out all but the most affluent of residents. This has an extremely negative effect on what has always been a healthy mixture of races and classes, which adds enormously to all the aspects mentioned above. In summary, it is the position of the Bucharest Commission that expanding legal short-term rentals to more of the district would have a devastating impact on the tout ensemble of the French Quarter. The current moratorium has allowed the housing and rental market to stabilize, increasing the number of full-time residents within the district and allowing small local businesses to thrive.
Thank you. Commissioners, any comments on the director's report?
Well, I'd just like to say that I concur, and I think that the director's report reflects as well as the work that zoning, the Bucharest Commission, and organizations such as VCPORA and the Bucharest Commission Foundation have identified the fact that this is a living, breathing urban environment, and there is a level of authenticity that I think people come here to experience, and the thing that maintains it being authentic is it being like its own viable ecosystem where we have residents and the current residents having so much trouble already with other pressures do not need, you know, the addition of the short-term rentals to contend with as well. So thank you.
Yeah, I agree with your director's report. You know, the only thing, and I don't know if it really has any thing to do necessarily with the short-term rentals, but the makeup of the residents in Bucharest, and maybe this is the impression that I've gotten that may be incorrect, but it always has seemed to be more on the affluent side to begin with, whether short-term rental or whatever, because the cost of living in Bucharest, you know, is pretty high. in my view, and I could be wrong on that. So, I mean, I've never heard of there being affordable units, affordable housing within the Blue Gray. So my only comment would be, I mean, is it accurate to say that, I know short-term rentals would have a negative effect on the Rook Array, but my question is, would it necessarily jump rental prices, property prices, past what it is already? I mean, again, the people that I know and live in the Rook Array are already of the affluent nature, right? The property values there are pretty high.
I think it's a valid question for sure. Probably something that somebody from the Department of Economic Development mm-hmm. would be better suited to answer. Mm-hmm. You know, historically, the district has been a much more mixed community, ethnically, socioeconomically. And, you know, I think you can go back maybe a couple of decades, and there would have been a lot more service industry people mm-hmm. living there, artists living there. And I am not really equipped to speak to the economic engine that has modified that. I think there's a lot of people that own second homes mm-hmm. in the district that, you know, that has pushed out former long-term residents. So there's a lot of things that probably have driven that, but not something that is under the jurisdiction necessarily of the BCC, although the impact that has on the Two Don Solomon, it has over a generation, let's say, is something that I know that there are members of the administration that are concerned about that, you know, but I think that short-term rental has been something within the last decade that has been able to be demonstrably responsible for driving up rental rates and driving out long-term residents. Mm-hmm. So, but it's a broader question,
gotcha.
For sure.
I mean, I can speak definitely that most of your service industry people that were bartenders, most of your bartenders, most of your waitresses were living in the French Quarter.
Okay.
And or prior to that, before Katrina, were living in the aggregate housing projects. Mm-hmm. So that was another knock on your service industry housing.
Yeah,
that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, it's just that I want to just be sure that whatever we're presenting, we're accurately saying that, you know, this is, because you're saying that it's going to greatly impact the property and people moving in there.
But
you already have an affluent.
You know, I agree. Maybe there is already an affluence, but, mm-hmm. you know, that's probably, although related to short-term rental, it's also more related to turning buildings into condos that mm-hmm. are then sold to, you know, timeshares, people that have second homes, et cetera. But the short-term rental is something that has happened in the last, let's say, 10 years or less, that when that prohibition came into place, it was demonstrable that rental rates stabilized, people, long-term residents, moved back into the district. And so, I can work on statistics for that. I mean, that's not something I have in my fingertips.
Right.
But I think that what my point is the prohibition that occurred several years ago demonstrated that this is a positive impact on residential quality and rental rates. So if they extended short-term rental, it would reverse that trend, and then it would make the trend away from long-term residents and rent stabilization negative.
All right. I just wanted to.
No,
because I don't know what the makeup is, and you know, I've heard people ask the question, well, you know, is it affordable to live in Rook Array right now anyway?
Right.
You know, is short-term rental really going to make an impact because the rates right now are so high anyway? Without that mortgage.
But there are a lot of long-term residents that still do live in the district, mm-hmm. and you know, if their quality of life is so negatively affected to where we lose them, or it's more important for, you know, people to oust a long-term resident so they can convert a building that right now, you know, you have long-term tenants, you can chop it up into smaller short-term rentals, then that affects the residential quality of the district. It affects the small businesses, it affects the, you know, the culture, and it affects the livability of the neighborhood.
Okay.
So.
Thanks.
We did also see numerous buildings, and I've watched this play out the last 8 years or so, numerous buildings that were doing short-term rentals, and then the moratorium happened, and they had to sell. So then it went back into residential. So you saw people coming back, too?
We also had a not significant number of large projects that were being developed with the intention of being short-term rental before the moratorium went through. And they were converted to a large number of units with the assumption that it would be legal. When the moratorium came down, they turned around and tried to rent those units. And many of those properties have either not been able to rent or have been trying to sell and haven't been able to. And they've been kind of, a lot of them have actually been sitting mostly vacant or totally vacant.
I just wanted to say that I'm glad that Commissioner Briefing brought this up, but I do think that the concern that you mentioned is reflected across the city in a lot of different neighborhoods as well right now, as well as sort of nationally. So I do think that that's something that is its own issue in and of itself. But I appreciate you bringing it up to, you know, talk, discuss kind of how the pressures relate to each other.
Yeah.
Any other comments? I know Commissioner Pearson has arrived.
Well, you know.
I noticed that the director's report does stop short of commenting on the short-term rentals that are permitted within the VCE district. I know VCPORA has taken out a pretty large billboard on Canal Street advocating for a complete and total ban on short-term rentals within the district. Was that a strategic omission?
No, I mean, what the conversation is right now is sort of maintaining the status quo. My personal position, and as the director, it's I guess valid to talk about it, is that the short-term rental, the legalization of short-term rental in the VCE districts has allowed or could potentially allow for the redevelopment of upper floors in buildings that currently are unoccupiable because of building code issues. And so that has been something that I have seen as a potential positive, and particularly since, you know, they're less likely to negatively impact the residential quality of the other areas because it's already a pretty aggressive use of those areas as is. So I think it's an interesting compromise. But that's just my personal opinion.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion on the director's report? Do we need to take any action on the director's report?
No.
Well, then we'll just thank you.
This will be in the record. So.
Excellent, thank you. All right, next up under new business is 616 Conti Street. I think we have an applicant, so let's have the report.
614 through 16 Conti is a green rated main building. It previously had brown rated courtyard infill. This three-story masonry structure with four bays on two upper floors and an altar ground floor dates from 1830. A three-story detached dependency was demolished between 1908 and circa 1940 through 51. The courtyard was infilled and a partial second floor was added on the Decatur side, mimicking a service cell. A third floor was illegally added sometime between 2009 and 2010. This is a proposal to construct a new rear addition in conjunction with a change of use from vacant to restaurant. Per application materials received October 21st, 2022 and January 10th, 2023, respectively. As noted in the architectural and historical description above, this property previously had brown-rated courtyard infill with a second floor rear addition dating to the mid-20th century. A third floor was illegally added by a previous owner between 2009 and 2010. The building has been vacant since that time and has suffered from significant demolition by neglect. In 2019, it was purchased by new ownership and an application was submitted to renovate the building and return it to commerce as a restaurant. Retention of the rear structures was included in committee and commission approval, and permits were issued for the first phase of work to begin. Due to pandemic-related obstacles, the project stalled, and the rear additions that had been approved for structural reinforcement and retention were fully demolished in 2020 due to immediate stability concerns. The historic green-rated building has continued to suffer from extensive water intrusion and staff is worried that any further delays in renovation may pose existential threat to the structure. The applicant is proposing nearly the same scope of work that was approved by the committee and commission in 2020. Because the courtyard infill was demolished, retention of the illegal non-conforming rear additions is no longer possible, and there was concern that they would require an open space variance to be able to proceed with the previously permitted plans. Before returning to the BCC with this proposal, the applicant sought and received an open space variance from the Board of Zoning Adjustments on January 9th, 2023, so there are no zoning or CCR-related issues with the proposed work. The at-risk green-rated historic structure will be fully renovated, including structural repair and reinforcement, a new roof, improved drainage, extensive stucco and masonry repairs, and millwork repair and replacement. The courtyard infill and second floor service cell will be rebuilt to the same massing they occupied since the mid-20th century. The only substantial change since the initial 2020 BCC approval is that the 2009 through 10 third floor addition will not be reconstructed. This will reduce the overall height of the rear addition considerably and will allow access to the rooftop mechanical equipment from an existing window on the rear of the main building. In keeping with previous approvals, contemporary metal and glass doors will be used at the rear addition in order to avoid giving it a false sense of history, but the rear should not be visible from any surrounding properties. The roof of the single-story courtyard infill will serve as a dining area and is surrounded by the tall courtyard walls of neighboring buildings. The unfortunate dormer installed on the rear roof slope by a previous owner will discreetly accommodate the restaurant's hood vent. The committee found the proposed work to be nearly identical to the scope approved in 2020. Since the previously existing courtyard infill and single-story service cell dated to the mid-20th century, and reconstruction of this massing will allow for the overall development of the long vacant at-risk property, the committee recommends approval of the new construction with a positive recommendation for the change of use to restaurant to be forwarded to the Director of Safety and Permits.
Thank you. Applicant, please state your name, address, and relationship to the property.
Samantha Johnson with Mano Architects, representing on behalf of the owner as project manager for 616 Compton.
I'm Hannah Hubble with Mano Architects.
Thank you. Do you all have any response to the staff report?
No response. We have my only statement to the commission is that, you know, we have been working diligently both with the owner, our design team, and the BCC over the last several years to ensure that this building comes back into commerce in an appropriate and beneficial way to the Vucurae. Unfortunately, as stated, the pandemic did create a numerous number of challenges, which we have seemingly overcome. And we look to you all for if you have any questions, happy to answer them today. But we're hoping to be able to move forward. We do have a tentative early release permit application in to ensure that the front building, the green rated building, can be reinforced and repaired as soon as possible. So we're looking to be as proactive as possible with this building.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions for the applicant or the staff?
So just so I'm clear, the courtyard is going to be completely filled in.
Correct.
And it will be open on another level of the sky.
Correct. It's we're basically reconstruct, we would want to reconstruct the structure that was there prior that was demolished, which consisted of technically a roof deck where the courtyard would have been prior to the mid-20th century.
And what was the use of it? What was its prior use before it was given to you guys?
As far as we know, prior to 2009, 2010, there were residential units on the upper floors, and the main first floor with the infill at the rear was commercial. But I'm not 100% sure what that commercial space
was. It was a salon.
It was a salon.
It was a gallery. A studio gallery.
That was Nikki Solwinski interjecting. All right, commissioners, any other questions, comments? All right. I have a public comment from Nikki Zielinski.
Nikki Zielinski, 1011 St. Philip, Lynchport Citizens.
while it's wonderful that this building is being brought back into Commerce and it was kind of a dumpy studio gallery, it is really, really unfortunate that the opportunity to regain open space is not being taken in this case. While I appreciate that they've made it smaller and all of that, we have zoning that is over and over and over again ignored. If everyone else has to have open space, it is really unfair that an illegal demolition is rewarded with not having to regain that open space. That said, I know that they're working through the process and all that. It's just unfortunate. It's unfortunate that they, my lot's the same size, 65 feet deep. I have open space. I'd love to have more. And it's just unfortunate.
Thank you. Do we have any other public comments? Seeing none. Applicant, would you like to make a final statement?
Nothing other than, we are purely trying to recreate the historic condition that we had the building, that the building was purchased in with improvements to recreating that historic infill and service wing.
Thank you. And staff, did this property have to get a zoning variance to recreate that original condition?
It did, because it was no longer considered grandfathered since it had been briefly demolished, but they did receive a variance to be able to rebuild basically what they had.
Yeah.
And it is smaller than the infill that was previously there.
Yeah.
It's smaller because they are not proposing to reconstruct the third floor, which was illegally constructed in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm. And that infill, just will be used as an outdoor dining space. There are similar spaces, I believe in the Bucherie, that would use that as mechanical equipment space. The mechanical equipment would be on the roof of the service wing, and so that courtyard infill on top of that would be outdoor dining.
All right, commissioners, any other questions, or is it time for a motion?
I'd like to move for approval of the new construction with a positive recommendation for the change of use to restaurant standard be forwarded to the Director of Safety and Permits.
Thank you. Do we have a second for that?
A second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? None opposed. The motion passes. Thank you all. Next up on the agenda is 1000 to 1012 St. Philip. I see we have an applicant, so let's have the state staff report.
Sure. 1000 through 1012 St. Philip is a yellow rated main building at the corner and a green rated rear addition. This is an appeal of committee denial to retain work completed without benefit of UCC review and approval, including gallery millwork modifications per application and materials received December 16th, 2022. The applicant is appealing to retain inappropriate columns and handrails installed on the second floor of the rear service building. Photographic documentation from late 2005 shows the correct columns and handrail in place, and a permit signed by Philip Stein on July 18, 2006 approves work to, quote, repair or replace the deteriorated fascia board and wooden balcony components as needed to match existing. The work was completed in deviation from permit approval. Historic photographs show a total of 8 columns with visible entasis and include the hypertrochilium and trochilium beneath what appears to be simple Doric capitals and a short blocky abacus. In contrast, the existing columns are much shorter, do not include the correct decorative elements, and support large out-of-scale blocks. The number of columns installed is also incorrect, as the St. Philip balcony is now divided into 3 bays and not 2. The handrail too was replaced in deviation from the previous conditions and is now taller, with more densely spaced pickets, giving the building a high-waisted appearance. Since the top rail dies into the base of the column below the turned shaft, this indicates that the current column base is likewise taller than the previous conditions. These changes to the columns and handrail, as well as the additional bay at the St. Philip elevation, have given the service building wildly different proportions when compared to historic photographs. Retention of the columns was consistently denied by the committee and commission when appealed previously in 2012, 2013, and 2015. The applicant then proposed to replace them to match the historic conditions in 2015, and a permit was issued, but the work was not completed. On January 10th, 2023, the committee once again denied an appeal to retain this inappropriate, unpermitted millwork. The applicant is also appealing the committee's denial of an appeal to retain floodlights installed on the rear of the main building. These fixtures are prohibited by the design guidelines and are visually intrusive from the right-of-way. Since there is an enclosed soffit in this location, recessed light fixtures with compliant lamping should be installed over openings on this facade. If the applicant is concerned that these fixtures may not be sufficient, additional light in the courtyard or at the street front may potentially be approvable, but no alternate proposals have been submitted for consideration. Staff recommends the commission uphold the committee's motions for denial.
Thank you. Applicants, could you please state your name, address, and relationship to the property?
Yes, go ahead.
Karen Blazer-Stein, RPI.
And Brian Jill, Jill Architects. I'm the architect. She asked to look into these issues with, a while back. I'm actually doing work for her daughter out in Lakeview, and she knew our familiarity with the Bucare, and we've done a lot of work down there over the years. She asked us to get involved. At the time we got involved, there were a lot of issues with this property. And there's no reason to go back over all the things that Karen has now agreed to do in terms of removing vegetation, fixing beams, replacing ceilings. She had another architect in 2015, I believe, or thereabouts, draw this sort of convoluted ceiling for the first floor of the gallery. I said that wasn't appropriate. We really need to expose that. Well, that's what they want me to do. And so she agreed to do all that and not go with what was already approved by this commission. Anyway, we've slowly chipped away at it. We're down to two items. And the two items are the columns and handrail on the rear building and the security lighting that she would like to retain. We'll start with the railing and the columns. First of all, she's three or four units. Anyway, she's over two. And by being over two, she's required to have a 42-inch high guardrail that can withstand a certain PSI of thrust against the handrail. So her husband at the time in 2006, it was the Wild West down here after Katrina, apparently went out to the lumber yard and bought what columns he could and replaced a rotted handrail and was told he needed to put it in at 42 inches, which is a correct statement by the city of New Orleans. That's what is there today and is in perfectly usable condition, and there's no reason, in my opinion, for her to rip that out. Now, if they were rotted and she needed to replace them, then sure, we could entertain the detail that is, you know, supported by this commission. The wood gallery detail, I'm very familiar with the columns, but I don't think the old picture you showed of the 31-inch or 30-inch handrail, which doesn't meet any kind of code, and what really is required today, that the proportions of that column would not look anything like that. So it would, you know, the base of the column, instead of being 32 inches, would be more like 44 inches, so that a 42-inch rail could run into it.
So. Just so you guys know, this is 05, okay? Sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Joe. I just want to make sure everybody knows. This is 05.
Right.
And then this is 08. Just so everybody, I know they're not side by
right.
side. Just
and
so
I can't, and I can't tell you the height of the 05 version.
Got it.
But I can tell you what code is requiring, and it's requiring 42 inches. And there's nothing that this commission or any other commission can do to override that from a safety standpoint. And as someone who renovates a lot of buildings. So this rail is in compliance with what her husband was told in 2006. Is that correct? By safety and permit in 2006. So it went from 2005 to 2008 with a taller handrail required by code and by the city of New Orleans. So all she's asking is, can she retain this until such a time as it rots? And then a more appropriate column would be put in. I don't know how much deviation, it's got a vertical bottom rail. I haven't gone down there and studied it, but how different that top and bottom rails are from your details, but they look.
The top is pretty different.
The top of the column.
Top of the column is.
No, I'm talking about the handrail itself. I'm saying, I understand what the column would need to, what would need to happen to the column if and when they rot out. But I think, we would not have detailed it this way, but he put it in this way. And the question is, can she retain a perfectly usable, functional, and to code handrail and column system that exists on the building today?
Thank you.
I think that's a reasonable request on her part. Out of all the things that she's agreed to remedy on these buildings, I think that's a reasonable request. We can move on unless somebody has questions on that.
Do you have more presentation?
Sorry?
Do you have more to present?
Well, do we want to talk about the security lighting?
We can make a comment about the rail, and I do appreciate the fact that 42 inch rail is required by code. We get applications all over the French Quarter for modifying, historic rails that are smaller, shorter. And we have details we provide for ways of either doing something on the inside of the rail to get to the 42 inches without completely modifying the rail itself and changing the proportions of the overall gallery, which then, change the proportions of the column. So, although we appreciate the fact that, yes, 42 inches are required, this is not the only way to get there. So I
would agree. I've done the metal rails with a piece coming back on it and things like that. But this is not it's not a metal rail. I'm not sure exactly what your remedy to a wooden picket rail
is. We could have absolutely done a metal rail on the inside. It would be less visually obtrusive and would have been able to retain the proportions of the original gallery. If it had come to us for a permit, then it would have gone to the architecture committee and we would have been able to review it and make recommendations. And I'm just saying, I just want to comment that although we absolutely support 42 inches, I want to make sure that the commission understands this is not the only solution. The architecture committee often reviews these and provides more appropriate resolution. So,
I just want to go on the record of saying that a metal rail inside of a wooden 32 inch high rail would not be less intrusive, in my opinion, as an architect who's practiced for 35 years in this city. I don't think there is nothing on this building that I find, other than the column shape, offensive. I would rather see that than a convoluted, combination
I'm
of
only
metal
saying
and wood.
I'm only saying there are other solutions.
I'm sure there are, but they're going to involve kind of bastardizing what you would like to see this be, and that's a 32-inch high handrail that was historic to the building. I think that's my opinion.
It's just unfortunate that it didn't come before the commission at the time it was being worked out what was going to happen here, because then the commission
totally
could have commented, discussed, and worked through a solution that would be the best possible solution to retain the existing proportions.
Frankly, the rail is one thing, but the columns are a whole other ballgame.
Right. Yeah.
But that would involve tearing out the rails to replace the columns. So, I just didn't see the need for it. I said, let's see how many of these things we can tackle when we got involved, and this is what we're down to. So.
And given the time that this was being done, things are not like they are. This was post Katrina. Immediately, we bought the building. We had owned the previous building for many years and bought that in July of 2005. August Katrina hit. Commission was not functioning as it is today. There were hard to get kinds of meetings and on time, you know, and also housing is short, so we're trying to get things done and get it back habitable. And at the time, that was the oversight that he was instructed with, and no one objected until 10 years later.
I think the problem.
Just to clarify a couple of things. First of all, the original permit for this work was issued early in 2005 before Katrina hit. And it was reissued later in 2005 after Katrina, and then it was reissued again in 2006, which is the one that was signed by the applicant and picked up that we have in our file. So there were several different iterations of this permit that had to be reissued because it expired, and those went back before Katrina. Then the other thing,
purchased the property in July of 2005. So I don't know who else was doing these.
No, it was the same last name and everything. It was consistent. The applicant.
But you're talking a month between July and August.
Yes.
So you're making it sound like we did something and then circumstances changed.
I think
what she's trying to say is that it says to match existing every permit that was issued.
And that this permit, the one that the work was actually, you know, done under, was the next summer in 2006.
And they all say to match existing.
And we observed the work in 2012 and issued a violation letter for it then. And then consistently cited it between 2012 and now. And there's been at least, this is the fourth appeal for the columns. They've been consistently denied by the commission. And then there was a permit issued in 2015 to correct much of the work, including some of the items that are now proposed to be corrected again that were initially approved for correction in 2015. That work was not done. Now they're proposing to do that again, but the columns they're once again asking to appeal.
So, commissioners, just to summarize this column and guardrail conversation, it's really clear that what is existing there does not match what was previously existing, and that's what the permit says, and that's what would have been appropriate.
Yeah, I was not involved until 2022, but all this match existing, it's something that shows up on our drawings all the time, to match existing, but what was there didn't meet code. So
that's
what this commission's got to understand. How
that's
can
you
match existing to something that doesn't meet code?
Yeah, that should not have proposed. The applicant should not have
called the BCC staff and say that we have an issue with what's on the permit. We need to modify. I know, but I'm just saying.
We would have submitted a detail, and I know the process we would have gone through. But
and
I'm just saying what her husband was probably going through trying to get this thing approved and being told by the city that you have to be 42 inches high with your hammer. And he does a picket handrail that's 42 inches high. The city's a little bit lawless at that time. She can't find. I can imagine all that happening. And the picture that's being painted is sort of a one where they're trying to deceive and go down a different path and try to do something that's illicit. I don't think that's really the case. I really can paint a picture. I was swept off to Houston. We had a large project in the CBD going on. I know what it was trying to get answers on that building and get a permit was almost impossible. We started work without a permit on that building, a four-story building downtown, because you couldn't get any answers after Katrina. So I can imagine what her husband was going through trying to get the answers. That's all I'm saying. It's easy for somebody to say match existing, but if existing doesn't meet code, and then he does this, and he can't get any mill shop to make columns, he buys those. I mean, I'm just saying I can see that.
Yes, thank you. And I don't think that anyone is accusing anyone of being shadowy or underhanded. I think we know how this happened. I was here during Katrina. I remember how lawless this town was and how much confusion and how difficult it was to get materials and good quality craftsman labor. No one thinks that this was done purposefully or to get one over on anybody. I think it's just that we've got to work out, and It does not match existing. It's generally inappropriate for the building. And what I think the applicant's asking for, and that only the commission can give, is some consideration based on hardship. That's what we can do. Yes, Mr. Pearson.
And so just so I understand, so the request is that it be allowed to remain there until it rots?
Until it decays to the point where it needs to be replaced.
And what's the ETA on it?
What are we talking about? One column, one spindle, one rail? What's our measurement of, right, deterioration?
Yeah, like what?
I do think that we'll be waiting a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I would assume, one column would sort of trigger the, she can't go in and replace one column at a time with the same column. That wouldn't, in my book, constitute...
So those are things maybe to think about, commissioners, while the applicant presents just a real brief presentation on the other items at issue today.
Yeah. The other issue is a very brief issue. It has to do with the security lighting that she elects to have in her courtyard. As you can see in both during the day and at night, pictures that we provided on here. Yes, it is a bright light, which I believe in the ARC meeting you spoke.
We don't have any lights right now. We need light.
Excuse me, Greg, you need to finish.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so it lights up the street. It provides security for her tenants, and she would like to retain them. Simple down lights or can lights that we've proposed are going underneath the gallery that we're removing the ceiling from. We're going to do can lighting up underneath that's approved by the BCC now that we're removing that soffit. But simple down lights do not provide security like this light does. And she would just would like to retain them. I know in the other meeting, one of my guys drove down St. Philip and said he saw five or six, seven different examples of this very thing at night. And Brian's comment was, we're not considering those buildings, we're only considering this building. Well, the reality is when I go to a Board of Zoning Adjustments meeting, I'm required to prove why they should have it because they're being not allowed to have something other people in the neighborhood enjoy the benefits of. So why wouldn't the same...
My comment would be the fact that those people are probably also in violation. It isn't that we are allowing them. I'm saying that if you're basing your light fixture on what you're seeing down the street, do you know for a fact that they received permits to install those? Likely not, because we have violations for lighting all over the district. It's a chronic problem.
Yeah.
We understand the need for security, and then we are trying constantly to update our guidelines to make sure that our light fixtures do provide security, but are also appropriate for the building. So although I understand it's frustrating when you see your neighbors having a benefit, please understand that they're probably also going to adjudication for it. So.
Also, those lights have been up, the bulbs have changed, the fixtures have been up there. We can, 2,000 pictures from your website have been up there for more than 10 years. So I thought things were grandfathered in.
They've been continuously cited.
That's what matters.
Yeah.
It's grandfathered if we've known about it and not acted on it for 10 years. If you've been continually cited on it for 10 years, that clock starts every time.
I could not find any. This is the first citing that I've gotten for this.
You'd be happy to look at the record.
Did Joe have been cited to them?
Aaron, I'm sure, has.
I'll have to look at it more carefully, but I know Tony was very diligent about not citing things.
For sure.
But again, these are in my interior courtyard. So the back one you can't even see that goes over my door.
And this is what's great. I mean, this is an opportunity for, the commission can comment on things that the staff cannot. We uphold the guidelines. If the commission feels like these are in the back courtyard, they don't affect the two-dollar side of the district other than your courtyard, then the commission is in a position to take it over.
It's a matter of personal safety. It's dark. I think people jump my fences and they get drunk. And without these lights that are on motion, I don't know that someone's you know, you open the back door, you might have someone there, or coming in the evenings. It's, as you know, the quarter right now is has very little street lighting. They've been converted to these 5G poles that are supposed to have lights, and there are none. So there's nothing coming in from above to illuminate anything. It's very dark. And I said, these have been there for years.
And this is on a motion?
Yes.
Did you say motion? So this is off the majority of the time?
Yes.
So it's off the majority of the time, but you need it for security?
And it also has a switch. So
okay.
Yeah, when I leave in the evenings, I can turn it on so that when I come home at night, I can see where I'm stepping.
And wait, I mean, this is a simple fixture to replace. We have
tons of these. Staff, it's just this one floodlight?
There's
is that
two.
All we're...
There's two on that back corner.
Two, okay. Two fixtures.
But the other one, she's saying you can't see.
No, it's on the corner of the house. You can't even see it.
Okay.
So they probably don't have a picture unless they went in for a corner.
Well, there's something right there.
Take the picture.
In that corner.
All right, well...
One on the other end.
This one here, right? There?
Okay, there and in the middle.
That's a box. It's
yeah,
the one
that's
over that section.
It's
further back underneath
the.
You
can
see it on the, like, I can see it on the image on the computer, just the resolution of the screen. Is it, okay, you can see it on
yours. All right. Well.
Can I ask for one other clarification? Did Aaron say that the suggestion of recessed lighting was the staff's recommendation to, as an alternative to this?
So we suggested the typical solution would be to have a recessed fixture over each opening so you get a consistent light across the back rather than getting one bright spotlight. You would get a consistent light across the back. And then if you wanted to propose additional lighting, alternate lighting that's either in the courtyard, on the street, on that fence, on the wall, you know, there's other things that we can entertain. There's other things that are done at other properties. This is not a situation that's unique to y'all. We deal with this all the time. And what we would need is a proposal that we could respond to and say whether or not it's within the guidelines and how to tweak it to make sure that it is. But there's other solutions. I mean, typically, if you were going to have a light on a building by a door, it would be a recessed light, and it would be within those lamping guidelines. But that's not to exclude additional security lighting that may or may not be needed, that's on a motion, aimed a certain way, discreetly installed. You know, those are things that we do at other properties.
So perhaps changing this security lighting out to a more a smaller LED fixture.
A fixture, yeah. I mean, you might have to move your wiring back a little bit so it doesn't hit the fascia, but like a can light.
Well,
there's many different ways to do it.
Why
I wanted to hear Aaron's position on that is, or the staff's position, is that the photometrics of a can light are not going to do what this light does. Right?
No, and that's not the point. The point would be to use the recessed lighting to like appropriately light the building per the lighting and design guidelines.
Yeah.
And then you could supplement it with additional
security
lighting. But we would need to see a proposal.
Okay, so. So what I'm asking again, if she doesn't want to or can't afford to put in recessed lighting under that gallery, if we submit a whack fixture, a very small security light that we've used before, that's a small LED security light fixture, is that acceptable?
If you guys are willing to work with the staff to resolve this issue, then we can defer to allow y'all to work with the staff.
For now. I mean,
it's
worked for years. If it's not broke, why fix it? I mean,
it doesn't meet the guidelines is the problem. And so it's doesn't meet the guidelines. That's why we're talking about it today. So I think it's time to turn it over to the commissioners and let them ask any questions that they might have. Commissioners? No questions? All right, I know we have a public comment from Nikki.
I've lived across the street. We bought in 2003. That light was there. So there's that. Until the city gets some lights on Burgundy and St. Philip, I would like her to be able to retain it because we have no light on the street other than lights like that, including one across the street that's just a modern version of that that was approved since 2018. As far as the balcony, Phil, who is her deceased husband, was furious when they made him change the balcony. He didn't want to change it, but he had a renter and he had to change. So I think the big problem that's happening is that a lot of people are getting cited as though the VCC functioned as it does today prior to even 2010. Certainly since the CZO, it is a completely different body. We got our permits. I don't ever remember a single inspection, a phone call. They never said anything. They handed your permit and said good luck. It's a totally different animal now, and it's being treated as though it was the same in 2005, 2010, and it's not. Before, we went to the VCC in the 8th District, and we talked things over, and we worked something out, and we went on with our project. And nothing was said, and maybe it's not on paper, but that's just how it went. Furthermore, there were not one, but two commissioners living in the 1,000 block of St. Philip at the time the balcony was done. And I can guarantee you Betty Norris and Tom Bissell would have approved this balcony for Phil.
All right, speculation there on what the previous commissioners would have done.
Well, since
thank
Phil
you. Thank you.
Like, literally, the night after Katrina.
All right. So we've heard public comment. We've heard a presentation. Commissioners, do you have any other questions, comments?
So this construction doesn't meet the guidelines.
The balcony does not meet the guidelines.
The
floodlights do not meet the guidelines.
Yeah, and floodlights don't meet the guidelines. I totally sympathize with the fact that, you know, you do have to 42 inches is what it's supposed to be. I know that road is a hard road, especially when we're talking about a short buildings. However, you know, just looking at the photo and how it's been altered so much, it's, it seems to me at the end of the day, there has to be some correction at a base level on the columns, because they're not aesthetically correct. They're not what was typically there. I'm looking at the servants' quarters adjacent to it, and you could tell by the old photos that they seem to be sisters. And now that the columns have changed, it's totally changing the rhythm of what was there previously. It is understandable what happened after Katrina. I totally understand that. I was here too. It was the Wild West. But the problem is that this has been cited on a continuous basis. And as staff said, there are ways to deal with the height where you can maintain it, but then also there is still a compromise. You can get the guardrail you need that's, you know, so that someone doesn't have to go over the side. But I think there still needs to be consideration that the columns are not proportional, they're not what was there existing, and the railing is just too beefy and just don't really work in relationship to the column the way it did before. I'm kind of nervous of saying, hey, let's just wait until it rots, even if it's one column, because who's then going out there every year to say, hey, yeah, it's rotted, change that one. I mean, one could be changed and then we're back in this condition year after year after year.
One couldn't be changed without approval. Anything you do has to get approval.
Well,
so,
I mean,
right.
In theory, yes. Right, but I mean, my question then is, if one of the pickets rots or it falls off, Are you guys coming back to VCC to say, hey, guess what? One of the pickets is off. Now we're ready to go ahead and switch out.
Well, we didn't
all
say
the
it was a picket.
Columns.
I mean, I think there's a chance a picket could rot and one could replace it. But the column is another matter. And she's right. It's in the clearly can be seen from the street. So if a man's up there, I assume you have inspectors driving around, or somebody's up there tilting a column up, somebody would note that, right?
Mm-hmm. If
I mean, we're all clear.
Unless
that
it did it after
mean,
5 o'clock or on the weekends.
I think a better solution for if we were going to consider retention of this, a better solution than determining whether something has rotted or needs to be replaced is to put a time frame on it.
But Mr. Bergeron, I think we need to ask legal, how does that work? Are we allowed to put a time frame on something? Can we say within 2 years, when a year, that, how does that work? Sorry.
That's something I think we're gonna have to take a look at. I'm not prepared to give a response today to that question. I think that's something we'd have to research first.
I know on the HDLC that's not uncommon that we do allow retention for a certain amount of time, assuming
right.
that something will be replaced.
Yeah, I came before this commission, got Heritus approved in the French Quarter, and you put a 1 year, you said you're not sure you're going to accept Heritus as an acceptable product. Very reasonable request. We put it on 8-10 Decatur, take whatever the address was. You went back out after a year and you said, okay, it's an acceptable material. So, I mean,
you
knew
that. Ways of tracking that in our permitting software.
Right. So.
Well, the other thing I'm concerned about is this perceived grandfathering in that we keep sort of talking about this property and other properties. So, this could stay in place, for let's say 5 years, and then you sell the property, someone else buys it, they're still in violation, and they come back and they say, oh, well, we bought it that way. It's not grandfathered in. So then it's like this constant sort of discussion about the railings, and I don't know.
I'd say they would buy it with the same time frame.
I mean, yeah, so I think that's why, the time frame would be a good way if we can establish it. But I just I'm just concerned that it just keeps going and going and going.
And violations
all of a
go with the property, not with the owner. So mm-hmm. even
right.
if they sell it, it's
still,
that's
right.
still there.
Yeah.
It would be, now would we have a fight with the next owner? Probably, but it would be documented.
Mm-hmm. So the railing and...
violations when you sell
it. You're supposed to, but people don't.
Yeah. The railing and balcony... the railing and columns have been there for 17 years now, so that might be something to consider as you craft your motion.
Wait, in this condition.
So when was the first cited violation for the columns and the rail?
That was in 2012 when we got to fully inspect the property on site. There was a permit application that was under review, and then when the comparison of photos happened, during some research, it was discovered that this was supposed to match. It doesn't. So it struck an inspector as unusual, not looking right. Then they kind of went back, found what happened, wrote a violation letter for that at that time. Mm-hmm. And then it's been continuously cited and brought to adjudication since. So this is it was denied in 2012, 2013, and 2015 for retention. In 2015, she proposed to replace them. We approved it. No permits permits were issued. The work wasn't done. In 2019, another violation letter was done for other violations on the property, but also noting that the work to correct this violation was not completed per the 2015 permit. So it was cited again, brought back for another appeal to retain.
So it was over 6 years before someone cited it. Of something that's this conspicuous.
Once again, it was a Wild West, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
using
your
06 and 07, no, but not after 08, things, Brian, normalized. In
there
the
was
city.
Also a
you
period of time when the BCC didn't have an inspector. So we were discovering things as they came to us. We weren't able to really kind of go out and just observe these things and kind of dig it up. At that point, it was really kind of, as things were brought to us was when we discovered issues. And so at that time, it was if we didn't cite it then, it was going to be grandfathered within a short amount of time. So at that point, it was, we were still within the window to cite it.
Yeah, I understand. But my point was is that people were passing, inspectors were passing this.
There were no inspectors.
Or none.
There were no inspectors. and the people that worked
well,
in,
sorry,
at the BCC.
Sorry, there were two commissioners living across the street.
2005.
And nobody cited this building in 6 years. And so my point is, maybe they thought, hey, it looks pretty good. Is that possible? Look, I got involved in 2022. I'm just making an argument.
That's all speculation.
Two commissioners living across the street. Like, what?
Speculation. Don't know anything about them.
Also,
and
I don't think it's on the commissioners to cite anything. It's not our duty at all. It's all the authority. Staff level that happens. They would never do that. It's not under the purview of the commissioners to cite things. That's the staff's purview. So there could be a commissioner living across the street, but it's not.
You would come in if you drove through the French Quarter and saw a violation and tell Aaron or Brian about it.
Actually, I do not.
I don't. No.
No.
Really?
Because I want to be very impartial, and I want, like, when I'm sitting here, and I want to look at it from the stance of what my scope and what I am allowed to comment on is being, you know, uninhibited or unconvoluted.
When I'm in the French Quarter, I'm not working. I'm enjoying myself.
I understand.
Trying to relax.
I agree.
Wouldn't be cool if the criminal judge arrested you.
I did meet with Aaron on my premises to seek help and what can I do to correct. And one of her suggestions was, see if you can get that approved, you know, a waiver for it in its current condition. So it wasn't like I just thought of this to do this on my own over and over and over.
At that point, it had already been appealed several times, and I wasn't aware of it.
I mean, it was a viable option that was given, and that's why I'm pursuing it.
Yeah, and all of this is part of a package that's a good faith effort of the owner to remedy a lot of violations that are on site. A whole lot of stuff is getting repaired and fixed and rectified, so you could take that into consideration as you craft your motion. It may be time for a motion, commissioners. I think we've talked about this for a good while.
I would be interested in knowing the answer to the time frame question, because I do think that to me makes the most sense. The owner is, you know, doing improvements, but this would give them a little bit of a cushion to, like, prepare for it financially and to kind of keep the things that are working now, but with the understanding that, you know, we're always trying to push in the direction of improvement of the fabric of the Ucre and its historical accuracy. So
it's not a question I'm familiar with, but based on what Brian has said, that it's been done with the Historic Landmarks Commission and run by, you know, for, you know, council at that time to the Landmarks Commission, then I would suggest that that's a precedent that you could rely upon.
Can we take the matters separately, the balcony and the floodlights?
Sure.
So that we can do I would like to defer the balcony until we get a little bit more information on how we can set a time frame on the work potentially being corrected, if that's a viable option.
So, meaning, what information would you be seeking?
I would be seeking some sort of precedent, which it seems like has already been possibly set by the HTLC, if there could be a time frame set for when this work could potentially be corrected.
Well, I think the time, there is, like Tommy said, there's a great amount of precedent that's already been set, that many, many cases are settled and that a time frame is given. And that's at the discretion of the commission based on the material, you know, the longevity, longevity of the material. Are you taking into account the financial hardship of having to replace it? And like Tony said, where you, let's say, gave a number of years, or months or years in order for the applicant to financially prepare for the replacement. You know, and I think just for an example, in this case, if this was installed 17 years ago, and we know the longevity of even pressure-treated lumber these days is finite, that I think if you said, if you gave it a five-year, you didn't defer, but you denied it, but gave them 5 years to replace it, I think that would be very, very generous, because likely within the next 5 years, I would expect certain elements in this construction to begin to rot. But that way, it's finite. It's something that we can mark in our calendar. That in the fifth year, that we revisit this. That permits should be pulled. Of course, in 5 years, they would also have the option to come back to this commission and revisit a retention. Just to let you know that would be within your right. But I do think that would be a reasonable motion to make.
But the motion would be to deny it.
To deny it, but give them 5 years.
Give them 5 years.
To do the replacement.
And perhaps the wording might include 5 years, or if something were to happen where they're going to be replacing sooner than that. So if it got knocked down in another hurricane and it had to be replaced, but otherwise in its in its good condition now, I think I agree. 5 years seems that's kind of the projection I was thinking about.
And we might also note in this prospective motion that this is based on hardship. So I think there was actually a motion made for a deferral, but do you want to restate your motion or
withdraw the motion?
Or withdraw?
Withdraw the motion. Yeah, I'll withdraw.
Okay. So perhaps it's time for a new motion.
So then I would like to deny the motion to retain the balcony, but give 5 years to come. Is that to come back and revisit this again? And at that point, it would then go back to AC to have it reviewed. Or prior to 5 years, if there's any replacement that needs to be done with that.
Damage and necessity.
And right, and this would be based on purely on hardship.
All right, sweet.
May I ask for clarification? Does that include the floodlights as well? Or is the floodlights
I think we should do the floodlights separately.
We should probably do one motion, but since it's one application,
okay.
Do both, but you can they don't have to all you can deny one and approve the other.
Okay.
For example.
Okay. Well, then with that, I would also like to move to deny the floodlights. I'll be retained, and that the applicant go back to AC and work through alternate light
options. Take them down. That's the easiest solution.
Or take them down.
So I will trip them into the city. That's the one about it.
All right, so we have a motion. Could we restate it maybe succinctly, or I just want to make sure it's real clear.
On this motion, I'd like to deny retaining the balcony but note that in 5 years, the applicant has the ability to come back and at that time, there'll be a discussion about replacement of the balcony to its original condition. Getting too far off?
I think that perhaps the way it should be phrased is to deny it, but give the applicant 5 years to comply with the denial.
All right. Does that match your intent?
Yes. Sorry, y'all.
That's all right. That's all right.
Okay.
And a motion to deny the lighting.
So a motion to deny.
Noting that the applicant is amenable to working with staff to get things straightened out regarding the lighting.
Yes.
Okay.
So the intent is on your part is if this is denied, you're just going to take the light down and that's the end of it.
And I know that we're in the middle of a motion, but just to let you know that you can replace the lights with something that is staff approvable. So just by speaking with Aaron, we can show you fixtures and locations. So you don't need to live in darkness. That would be your choice.
Why hasn't that been proposed before?
Ma'am, because what we're talking about is the retention of what you have. Aaron has given you information about things that are in the guidelines. So we are happy to meet with you. We are happy to talk to you about things that are staff approval.
Okay.
So
would you do two things for me, Brian?
Sure.
Can you and Aaron?
Oh, go ahead. No, I just wanted to say, I just wanted to get that into the record. But yes, we will absolutely meet with her. Aaron and
yep.
I will provide all the information you need for staff approval lighting that is great for security.
Yep, and we are.
And a 42-inch high wooden.
That's going to be next. Nice, that's not part of this. We'll talk
we're,
about that.
Okay, yep. Yeah. We are in the middle of a motion. I think there's a motion on the table. Do we have a second for that motion?
Awesome.
We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Can I make a comment?
Sure.
I just want to say on the record, I think I'm gonna vote yes, but I think a 5-year window is really generous when the first notice of violation was 10 years ago. But I'll go ahead and vote yes. But I just want that on the record.
Okay, thank you. Noted. Any opposed? None opposed. So the motion for denial of both of these items passes. And you guys can work with staff to figure out the next steps for that item.
And if you'd like to talk about the 42 inches, I can talk with you. So if you want to talk about 42 inches, I can talk with you in just a second.
Yeah. No, I thought there was a detail you could send me.
No, it's not a one-size-fits-all. When you're talking about rail extensions, they're all different, which is why committee review is very important.
Let's put them in.
Yep. So we have reached the end of our agenda. At the end of our agenda, we have ratification of architectural committee and staff actions. We've received no information on that. I think we're going to defer that to next time. Do we need a motion to defer that?
Yes.
So do we have a motion to defer?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Second for that?
Seconded.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
None opposed, so we will defer ratification. And we are truly at the end of our agenda. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
None opposed, we are adjourned. Our next meeting is March 22nd.
Thank you.